All right, welcome to My Guys in the Desert on a Tuesday. It's a big day because it's opening night at Circa Sports. We're going to have you covered on VSiN. Go to VSiN.com tonight to watch all the festivities. And Wes, Tim Murray, and Danielle Alvari are going to be the hosts. Wes Reynolds and Johnny Avello, DraftKings Sportsbook Director, in with me today. Tim Murray's going to host tonight's show on the red carpet. He's kind of playing the role of Ryan Seacrest tonight, right?
Yes. Yes, that's perfect for Tim. If Ryan Seacrest was like 6'9" and redheaded, but that's an apt analogy.
What is he? 5'9"? Maybe.
I think Tim's got a foot on him.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to college football right off the bat here, because I was on this morning with Mitch Moss and Paul Howard on Follow the Money. We were talking about this Wisconsin-Nebraska game, and this kind of sums up the COVID chaos of the football season. Wes, this from Dennis Dodd of CBS. Wisconsin quarterback Graham Mertz has tested positive for COVID a second time, backing up the first positive, and will enter the Big Ten's 21-day protocol, a source told CBS Sports. So Wisconsin was without starting quarterback Jack Cohn, who had foot surgery in the middle of October. Now Graham Mertz, who was 20 for 21 in the season opener with 5 touchdown passes, goes down. His backup, Chase Wolfe, tested positive. And now it looks like Danny Vanderboom, the 4th-string quarterback, is going to start for the Badgers at Nebraska. Circa Sports had this number as high as 10 on Sunday, and it's going to crash to somewhere around a field goal or less, right?
Yeah, I'm seeing it at a couple faraway places, -3 on the Badgers, total of around 47, give or take a half a point. But, yeah, this was a spot, Matt, we talked about on the opening line show here on VSiN on Sunday night. We were kind of looking at the Nebraska spot a little bit because Nebraska, despite getting beat by 35 at Ohio State, that played a lot closer than the final score indicated. I don't think Nebraska was never in the game to win, but that was like a 17-21 point game. I didn't think that they were bad, so I thought there could be some value on the Cornhuskers. Now this is an absolute pass for me.
Johnny, this number is not up at DraftKings, right? At what point might you put this number up? It looks like it's going to be the 4th-string quarterback for
the Badgers. We're fine with that. So yeah. once we're sure of that, it'll go back up. We opened also at 9.5, and we were down at 3.5, and then took it off the board. So, and the total, we were 57.5 to 48.5. It's quite an adjustment.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, we'll get this up shortly.
Okay. Wes, how does it change the big picture in the Big Ten? When you look at the Big Ten West, Wisconsin was a favorite, and I don't think that's the case right now.
No, not at all. And then, of course, Minnesota, who kind of looked like if you weren't on one of the short chalks for the Big Ten on terms of the futures board, they look like they might be the value play, but not anymore after what we saw. So it's wide open. Look, Northwestern looked very good. Granted, it was against Maryland, but Peyton Ramsey, clearly an upgrade for that offense at quarterback. Iowa, even though they lost the first game, you don't want to put them out yet, and all of a sudden you're Purdue Boilermakers.
Northwestern, don't forget about the Purple Cats.
I'm not forgetting about the Purple Cats. They would be the one I would be looking at in that Big Ten West right now, even though I think Purdue is very much improved, and that was a big win they got on Saturday over Iowa.
Big Ten Conference Championship odds from DraftKings, looking at it right there. I've got Purdue at 200-1, I bet, on a app here in town about a week and a half ago. Northwestern at 150-1 at DraftKings. And if you look at the schedules in the Big Ten, I think Purdue and Northwestern caught a break. And, Johnny, we saw Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game a couple years ago. It wouldn't surprise me if it happens again, because we've seen problems already with the two teams at the top being Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Well, we see problems with Wisconsin. You know, remember, Wisconsin has a win, and they may get a win in this game, even with a 4th-string quarterback. That's possible.
Uh-huh.
And then they're going to have their guys back again. So that's the difference between a COVID injury and an injury.
They're not going to have them back because the Big Ten's got a 21-day protocol. These guys got to sit out 3 weeks.
Both guys do? I did not.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So now with Cone, who hurt his foot in fall camp, so now going to that 4th-stringer at Wisconsin. So a lot of running the ball for the Badgers, which we're used to watching them over the years.
Oh, it's interesting, Johnny, because it's different in the Big Ten than the SEC. They've got this 21-day protocol, and there are reports out there, too, that there are several more Wisconsin players who might have tested positive, which is going to create a problem possibly for the Badgers.
Could create a cancellation of this game, couldn't it?
You know, or a game next week or the week after, and who knows? Big Ten's got an 8-game schedule, and that's this week's game, Wisconsin at Nebraska. All right, welcome to the South Point Sportsbook. It's my guys in the desert. Matt Eumanns joined by Wes Reynolds and Johnny Avello. And Wes swaggered into the studio today and said, I'm here to take Tim Murray's job.
Little inside joke for the VSIN populace out there.
Tim Murray, Danielle Alvari hosting tonight with Dave Farah from the Circa opening night downtown. Johnny, have you had a chance to get a look at the newest casino in Las Vegas?
Only on videos, pictures. Yeah, I know. Did you guys go down there last week? Get a quick peek at it? I know
tonight.
A few guys did, right?
Going down tonight. I've just seen videos like everybody else or walked around the outside.
It looks great. It looks like a theater format with, you know, bottom and top and a great video screen. All views from all angles look great. So I think it's going to be a great place to go.
Sportsbook looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
Were you involved in designing the new sportsbook at the Wynn several years ago?
Yep. Yeah. Wynn, the Paris, Las Vegas, the Bally's. Yeah, I've been involved in quite a few of the designs of them.
Wes Reynolds, a former worker at the Wynn Sportsbook.
I am. It is a very nice sportsbook over there at the Wynn. I remember John, when he was the man in charge over there, used to put out those NFL lines, first to market on Sunday afternoon, and all the pro bettors and all the runners would be lining up to the right, and it's like, okay, you're going to bet it at this number? All right, you're first in line, so you get the good number, so now we're going to move it.
All right, let's talk NFL betting since Wes made that segue there, and we're going to start with last night's game. I'll tell you, as entertaining as Sunday night football was, that's how boring last night's game was. But that's okay. If you bet the Rams and you bet the under, that's exactly what you wanted last night. The Bears got beat down like we talked about on this show yesterday. I was hoping to see the Bears get beat down. They were due. They were 5-1. Nobody believes that they were a 5-1 football team. How about this from Evan Kaplan on Twitter? You have 6 5-win teams in the NFC. Here are their point differentials. Buccaneers plus 80, Cardinals plus 57, Rams plus 52, Packers plus 38, Seahawks plus 31, and there's the Bears minus 2. Last night, Johnny, what was the action like on Monday Night Football?
Bears. Bears on the money line.
Public underdog.
Well, Bears on the money line for 2 straight days, yep. Just thought they were going to win that game. You know, you talk about last night's football game. The Rams are not the most exciting football team to watch either, Matt. They're a little on the boring side, too.
Yeah.
They can make a game boring to
play
towards the way the competition plays. The Rams have been like, it's not that high-flying offensive Rams team of a couple of years ago, that's for sure.
No, it's not. And 24-10 was the final last night. Rams opened, I thought they opened in most spots 5.5-point favorites and closed 6.5. Is that what you had at DraftKings?
Yes.
What about the total last night? Did you see sharp play under the total or
we
no?
We did not. We did 45, not.
45, 44.5?
Yeah. Just stayed kind of right there all week. So I didn't see a lot of sharp play on the total.
Vinny Maiulo here at the South Points talked about, and Jimmy Vaccaro was in yesterday too. They talked about butt kicking for the books in week 7. Did you experience the same thing or not?
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. And actually, the last game helped us out a little bit, too. Seattle not winning that game and not covering. I mean, there they are. At one point, I saw the game was up. They were up 10 late. It kind of turned it off and turned to something else. And then come back and see that the Cards won that game. Kind of surprised. But that helped a little, but we were already stuck pretty good by then.
Yeah, that's what Jimmy said yesterday. That was about a $200,000 difference Sunday night with the Seahawks losing that game.
It was a couple $1 million for us.
Okay, so it made a difference. All right, this is from Dan Wiederer on Twitter. For the 24th time in Matt Nagy's 40 games as Bears coach, the offense has failed to get to 21 points. Wes, you can put part of the blame on the quarterbacks, Mitchell Trubisky, Nick Foles, if you want to do that. But Matt Nagy's not an offensive genius. I'm tired of watching this guy call plays, and I think Bears fans are too.
Yeah, and as a Indianapolis Colts partisan, I'm happy that Matt Nagy was – quote unquote uncomfortable with the interview with the Indianapolis Colts and decided not to take that job. That being one of his mentors, Brad Childress, revealed that a couple of years ago. But yeah, what you saw with the Bears, four straight games not approaching 300 yards of offense. They actually got 279 last night, which was their highest in 4 weeks. And look, Nick Foles even spilled the beans, and Brian Greasy went on air with it, who was doing the commentary for the Monday Night Football game on ESPN last night, and said, look, sometimes Matt Nagy sends in a play, and I'm like, it's not going to work because I'm not going to have time because this offensive line is poor. They can't run the ball, and they can't protect the quarterback. So how they're 5-2, that shows that the defense has at least carried the day for them.
They did. The Bears did get one explosive play last night. That was a fumble return for a touchdown.
Like I said, the defense the defense is their best offense there in Chicago.
Nick Foles, 28 for 40, 261 yards, two interceptions last night. There's been some talk, should the Bears go back to Trubisky? I don't think you can make that move right now. Once you make the switch to Foles, you have to give him a couple months, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, Mitch gives them more of a dynamic run in the ball. I mean, right. He really is their running game because it's kind of out of necessity because the guys up front can't block.
All right, Jared Goff last night with two TD passes, but he was far from spectacular. But good enough to get the win. Rams go to 5-2. Bears fall to 5-2. Rams 6.5-point favorites, 14-point win. And the Bears were the definition of a public dog last night. And a lot of times you want to avoid those in the NFL.
Public dogs go to slaughter.
Yes, most often do. I want to talk about one of the more intriguing games of NFL Week 8. Patriots at Bills, Johnny. It looks like at DraftKings you have Buffalo a 3.5-point favorite. I see Station Casinos in Vegas has four. Most books have moved to 3.5 on this game. Dov Cleveland on Twitter, we'll throw this graphic up, says Patriots have talked about trading 2019 Defensive Player of the Year cornerback Stephon Gilmore. That's from Albert Breer, I guess, reported that first. Patriots were in contact and had conversations with teams about trading him in August. Could be a trade target again with the Pats going through a losing season without Tom Brady. I wrote about this. It's in the New York Post today. And teams going in opposite directions right now, Buccaneers and Patriots. But do the Patriots have a little bit of life left in them or not, Johnny? They are road dogs here against a Bills team they have dominated basically for two decades.
Well, you know, they've lost three games in a row. They lose this game, four losses in a row. I don't remember Patriots losing four games in a row. It's been a really long time. You know, the Bills, I think, are saying it's our time. You know, Tom Brady's gone. Mm-hmm. This is not the same Patriot team. Right. It's our time to win a division. With that being said, I've been reading about Cam Newton this week. He admits he played a bad game. He says, you know, if we want to win, I can't play bad games like that. So I expect this to be a pretty tight game. I think the Patriots will come with a full effort. Don't know if they'll get there, but I expect to see a better performance than last week.
Yeah, this is an interesting spot, and I was kind of leaning a little bit more toward the Patriots side early in the week because, look, when a team loses two straight games at home, what's the best thing for that to happen to them? To go on the road and get away from the normal environment and kind of band together, you know, okay, we got to get on the road. Create some kind of a phony us against the world type of mentality. But the Bills, to me, they've kind of regressed. They haven't looked good against what I would say is good competition. They've beaten up on some bad teams. So I'm not convinced that they're a runaway winner here in the AFC East.
If the Patriots lose this game, do you guys think Bill Belichick will be a seller at the trade deadline? He's going to sell off some of their more valuable players for draft picks or whatever, because they will be at that point. If the Patriots lose, they'll be 2-5, Johnny. They do have two games remaining with the Jets, but 2-5, and the Bills will be 6-2. Do you think Belichick would actually sell for the first time at the deadline?
Yeah, I've never seen it before, so I don't know. It's something new for him. He's never in that type of position.
He's got an uncanny knack to know when to get rid of guys, too. Mm-hmm.
Well, Gilmore is the player with the most value, you would think, right? If you're going to put somebody on the market and you want to pick up a first-round pick or a high second-round pick or something like that. Anyway, the Bills right now at DraftKings minus 400 to win the AFC East. The Patriots at about 5-1, Dolphins 7-1, Jets at 1,000,000-1. How about somewhere around 1,000,000-1? How about the Dolphins? Do we think they have a chance to make a run in this division after the bye week with Tua at quarterback? Or are you guys like me, do you feel like the Dolphins were better off with Fitzmagic at quarterback?
I felt that they did have a chance, but all of a sudden it's like you're 3-3, you're only a game out of the division, and all of a sudden it's Tua time. It's premature Tua time. I mean, you're going to go with him at least at the very earliest, the start of next season. But I think when you're riding well, and this is a Miami team that plays hard, they give you an honest 60 minutes every single time out. I give Brian Flores and his staff credit for that. But I wouldn't have made that change. I thought Ryan Fitzpatrick deserved a little bit more of a leash here. Like, if they would lose the next two in a row, then it's like, okay, we drafted this kid in the top 10 of the first round. We got to go with him. And he would maybe have been a little bit more understanding.
I agree with Wes. They're 3-3. They're playing pretty well. And now you got a kid coming in to start that's 2-for-2 for, like, I don't know, he's 2-for-2 for 20 yards maybe, probably less than that. So I think you're saying that you know, we're going to just experiment now, and I think they're giving up. That price 1-4 looks a little cheap on the Bills. It really does. I mean, even if they lost this week, they're still got a 2-game lead. I don't see anybody catching them, and I really don't. Not unless this Patriot team runs off 5-6 wins in a row, and that's very unlikely.
Well, I think at DraftKings, you have the power to change the line. Can you bump it up to minus 500?
I think I'm going to. Oh, okay. I'm sitting here thinking about it, saying it's cheap. Can't wait till this show's over to make a phone call.
Jump on your phone right now. Text. How about this from Pro Football Talk? Breaking news. Trevor Lawrence says, my mindset has been to go pro, but who knows? Not that that's really breaking news, but Trevor Lawrence maybe not thrilled about the prospect of being drafted by the Jets. He's going to go pro. I don't want the Jets.
I want the Jaguars. I want to go play for the Cons down there in that situation.
That's the downside of being the number one pick. You're going to go to a crappy team. The Jets at DraftKings, will they go 0-16, Johnny? You've adjusted this prop quite a bit. Will the Steelers go 16-0? Yes, at 20-1 odds. Will the Jets go 0-16? Yes, plus 260, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Are you seeing much play on that prop?
We have, especially on the Jets. You know, they don't seem to be able to score more than 10 or 14 points a game, the Jets. And I do see a win for them, though. You know where I see their win? I hate to tell you guys this. You probably not think the same
Raiders.
Way. I see a win against the Raiders. That's where I see a win.
They blew out the Raiders last year.
They're going to be home against the Raiders. The Raiders allow a bunch of yards a game, a bunch of points per game, and Darnold's liable to have their pass defense is terrible. That's when the Jets may score their most points. So that's on the other side. On the Steeler one, nobody's touching that right now. And I know for sure the Steelers have at least one loss in there, possibly two or three.
Yeah, I wouldn't even consider taking a shot at that 20-1 on the Steelers. Would you, Wes?
No, not at all. And look, even with this 0-16, we saw it last year with the Dolphins. Everybody thought the Dolphins were the worst team in NFL history, right, and they ended up winning 6 games. Jets aren't going to approach that, but I think there's a couple wins. I'm with Johnny. Perhaps the Raiders, maybe even on the road against the Chargers. That's still a very young team that's not very good defensively, as we saw Jacksonville kind of run through them with the running game over the weekend.
All right, let's look at the Falcons-Panthers game. The Falcons have had an uncanny knack for blowing leads in the fourth quarter, just losing in spectacular fashion. Their win probability has been over 98% in 3 of their losses, which is unheard of. Carolina, a 2.5 or a 3-point favorite. BetMGM's got Carolina minus 3. Total is 49. This is the Thursday night game, and Christian McCaffrey has returned to the practice field. I don't know if he's going to play in this game, Wes, but it looks like he's questionable to play. How do you see the Thursday matchup regardless?
Yeah, this would probably be like a teaser territory game for me to tease Atlanta up through the 3 and 7. And those have really been good this year, even better than in normal seasons. So that's what I would look at. But look, Atlanta, another heartbreaker. They blew another lead against Detroit on Sunday. So what's the mindset of this team? It's like they finally got a win. So it's like, okay, the monkey's off our back. And then it's here we go again. So this is what happened to them last year. They went 1-7, and then they ended up 7-9, rallied and saved Dan Quinn's job. I don't know if they have another rally in them.
I don't see a rally. I don't see a rally like that, Wes, but I could see them winning 4 or 5 games for the rest of the year. Yeah, I think McCaffrey, I think McCaffrey's going to play if he's able. They were going to make that decision today after practice, but I don't think you chance McCaffrey either, right? I mean, you don't want to put a guy out there that's 80%. I mean, you want to make sure that he's healthy. He is a future of that team right now.
You know, plus Mike Davis played pretty well in his place, right, Wes? And the Panthers won three in a row after McCaffrey went down. They have lost the past two to the Bears and the Saints, but it's not like they've been helpless without McCaffrey in that offense.
Matt Rhule and Joe Brady have done a good job in Carolina with Teddy Bridgewater. And plus, I think they had a really big effort. I think both of us were on the Panthers last week. They had a good effort because that was Teddy Bridgewater's kind of homecoming. He was with the Saints last year. Remember, he went 5-0 when Drew Brees was out with that injured thumb. So they wanted to play hard for him, and they got inside the number and really had a chance at the end to win it outright. Just couldn't get it done.
Yeah, I thought the Panthers were an easy play in the contest. So you and I were both on that. Saints were without their top two wide receivers, mm-hmm. Michael Thomas and Emmanuel
Sanders. And Drew Brees already can't throw the ball more than 15 yards down the field anyway.
No, he can't, but I tell you what, he was efficient, and his numbers have actually been pretty good, surprisingly good since that loss in Vegas to the Raiders. Quick look at Monday Night Football. Antonio Brown has signed with the Buccaneers. Bucks are 10.5-point favorites against the Giants, total of 46 on Monday night, Johnny. What do you make of the Bucs?
This is just a bad matchup for the Giants. Uh-huh. You know, Bucs are actually clicking on all cylinders now, and you know, the Giants are just—they're hopeless, right? You know, Giants just have nothing going now. Maybe they keep this close for a little while, but I don't. Giants have nothing to compete with.
Have you seen much futures action on the Buccaneers?
Yeah, a lot.
A lot.
They're our number one team to win the conference and the Super Bowl.
Interesting. All right, that's Johnny Avallo, DraftKings Sportsbook Director. Wes Reynolds also here. Quick break on My Guys in the Desert. We come back. Hey, don't forget about World Series Game 6. That is tonight.
If you need the hire, you need Indeed. You instantly get a list of quality candidates from Indeed's resume database the moment you sponsor a job. Get started at Indeed.com/credit. Now is the perfect time to start betting on soccer. And with BetRivers Sportsbook, you can get $100 in free bets when you deposit $50 using the promo code EPL100. Again, that's promo code EPL100. As always, get great customer service and only one-time playthrough at BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. First-time depositors and new users only. Must be 21, playable in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. In Colorado, call 1-800-522-4700. Playable in New Jersey House and New Jersey S Play Sugar House. Back to you, Matt Humans.
All right, Johnny. Danielle's got a lot deeper voice today. Did you notice that?
She doesn't sound the same. Must have a cold.
Fabulous job there, Jacob Roach.
Tampa Bay and the Dodgers, Game 6 in the World Series. Blake Snell, Tony Gonsolin. And Gonsolin has struggled in the postseason, Wes. 9.39 ERA and 7 2/3 innings. Blake Snell, no hit the Dodgers through the first four innings in Game 2. He was knocked out after 4 2/3. But Snell helped the Rays get on the board in this series. And I'm anticipating another pretty good start from him tonight. The one thing I liked about, I bet Snell in Game 2, is the Dodgers hit right-handers much better. Mm-hmm. So Snell's got a little bit of a matchup advantage here. And he's also, on the opposite side, got the weakest Dodgers pitcher opposing him tonight. We've seen this number come down just a little bit. Rays plus 120 right now at the South Point. Johnny, where do you have this number at DraftKings?
We actually opened this 55, pretty high number, down to 34. You know, I don't blame the bettors for going this way. You know, like you said, man, Snell's been good the last three. He got nine strikeouts and 4 2/3. Rays are best against right-hand pitching. If you look at their record, they're 18-4 the last 22. And on Gonsolin, one inning in last, I think that was a prepared start to go one inning. He's going to go a little bit more tonight. But he's a favorite in every single start, and he seems to just falter. So I think the Rays are one of those hungry young teams that know how to win. This spot doesn't concern them much. I think they'll battle. I think it'll be a close game.
So you're down from Dodgers minus 155 to 137? 134?
Yep.
All right,
21 cent move.
What about this? Because when you look at the Dodgers pitching, it's almost like Dave Roberts is stacking the deck for Game 7, where he's going to have Walker Buehler and Clayton Kershaw in Game 7.
And Urias, that's the plan. No, none of those three are pitching tonight, no matter what.
So when you look at that, do you think, I got to bet the Rays?
I would lean that way, sure, okay. Because, look, Gonsolin, he's got to be on somewhat of a short leash. You look at the postseason numbers, 8.22 walks per nine innings is his average, 3.52 home runs per nine innings. That shows you that this can go sideways very quickly here in the postseason. And I think the Rays are much better positioned if this is a bullpen game. Like, let's say Snell doesn't go five. Or he gets pulled earlier. The Rays are much better positioned, have a lot more arms available. Of course, you would anticipate they go with Charlie Morton in Game 7, both Buehler and Kershaw available for the Dodgers. So I do like the Rays on the price. This was a hedge thing for me because I had the Rays to win the World Series on a futures ticket, and then I hedged out with Dodgers in 6, Dodgers in 7. So to at least make a little money off that. But in terms of this game tonight, I do agree with the move on the Rays.
All right, this series has gone pretty well for me. I mean, I played the Rays plus 185 in the series. I bet the Rays in Game 2 at plus 125 and the Dodgers in Game 3. That's all I've been involved in basically to this point. But when you look at the exact outcome prop, are you tempted to play the Dodgers in 7 at plus 250? That's a DraftKings and the South Point. So you both have that number up 5-2 odds on the Dodgers to win this thing in 7, which seems like the most likely outcome to me right now.
It's risky because they have to lose tonight and they have to win tomorrow.
Sure. Right.
So,
but they're going
to
be pretty significant favorites in Game 7, right? With Kershaw and Buehler lined up to pitch, right?
Yeah, they should be. You know, I was just thinking, why would you make that announcement that Buehler, Kershaw, and Urias are all not going to pitch tonight? If I'm the manager, I'm not going to say that information.
Right?
That's number one. And number two is, if the man on first and second, two outs, I might bring in Kershaw to get the final out and end this thing tonight. Why would I? You know, so you should never say that because you never know what you need to do. This game may go a bunch of innings, and he may have to use one of those guys.
Wes, if I ask you right now, how do you think this series is going to end? Rays in 7 or Dodgers in 6 or 7, then what would you pick?
I would say Dodgers in 7. I know
plus
that's
250,
kind of,
right?
That's kind of the obvious thing to say, but I just think they're the better team. I do think the Rays are going to get it tonight, though. I didn't like this move by Roberts going with Gonsolin here in Game 7.
You know, it's the first bad move Dave Roberts has ever made.
Right.
Yeah. First bad move
the
before
first
the game
today.
Starts. Yeah, right.
He never makes mistakes with tactical mistakes with the pitching staff. That game starts at 8:08. Eastern tonight, Rays and Dodgers, Game 6, Blake Snell against Tony Gonsolin. Quick break here on My Guys in the Desert. We come back. Our game show every Tuesday, this one focuses on the Masters.
It's a big week here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and we have some great news for everyone. Starting right now, you can watch every VSiN show for free on VSiN.com all week long. Watch Follow the Money, A Numbers Game, The Lombardi Line, The Edge, and all of our 14 hours of live daily sports betting programs. It's all free 24/7 on VSiN.com this week. And while you're there, check out our 10-day free subscription trial to sample everything we have to offer, including the daily best bets emails and our Point Spread weekly betting guide. This is the perfect week to get more from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Head to VSiN.com now to start watching for free. Back to you, Matt Eumanns.
All right. Jacob's got that voice. It sounds like he used to be a light hits DJ. Like, up next, Lionel Richie. Dancing.
I'm ready for him to play Here's Player, Baby Come Back on Yacht Rock Radio.
All right. Let's get to our weekly game show on Tuesdays. The Masters, Cash or Trash. All right. So I'm going to throw a player out to you guys. We're going to look at DraftKings odds for the Masters, and you tell me if you want to play it or trash it. Cash it or trash it. That's what we're going to call. I'm going to start here with how about this guy in the Zozo Championship over the weekend. Rory McIlroy finished with 29 total birdies on the week, his career best on the PGA Tour. When I watch Daily Wager on ESPN, it seems like the bear picks Rory to win every week. Rory or John Rahm, I have a feeling he's going to be on one of those guys in the Masters. What about Rory? Johnny Avello, I'll start with you. Cash or trash Rory at 11-1 odds at Augusta?
I'm going to trash that. I mean, I think he's got four out of the last five Masters in the top 10. I don't like the way Rory's playing. He's just not, can't finish a tournament when he's just not the same Rory this year. He's consistently in the top 20, but he's just not a winner. Mm-hmm. Not this year.
Trashed it for me. I know these numbers are a short sample size because the new season just started for the 2021 PGA Tour season. 114th in driving accuracy, 59.7%. 183rd in greens and regulations, 64.8%. He's making birdies, but he's having to really scramble to make those birdies. He's always great off the tee. Second in strokes gained off the tee, 1.28 per round. So he's just not in the form at that price. I mean, if I got him anywhere at like 18, which you're not going to get, yeah, I'd be more interested, but trash it for me.
I would have to get 20-1 to even consider this. It's going to be trash at 11-1. Rory has not won a major since 2014. And really, Wes, very rarely has he even been in contention this year. He has won a FedEx Cup recently, but still.
Yeah, and we're waiting for that nappy factor to kick in. He just had his first daughter.
Stop? Would you stop?
I know. I try to find little angles with that, but it has not worked.
Such a sap. You're like a soap opera guy when it comes to handicapping sometimes. He just had a baby. I'm going to play him this week.
Well, you can't just always rely on numbers, Matt. If it's just analytics, it's boring.
All right, cash or trash. One of Wes's favorite players, DJ. Dustin Johnson, the 12-1, was a favorite in this event a couple of years ago before he fell down the stairs. Wonder what happened there. What do you think, Johnny? DJ, 12-1.
I am also trashing that because the COVID probably curtailed his game. So, he's also has, good results at Augusta, but it's another one. The price too short for me on, and I don't know if he's fully recovered.
Yeah, I'd need more for this. It's a trash it for me. The approach game has been really good. He's second in strokes gained approach the green, second in tee to green. Putter hasn't really fired. He's missing too many fairways thus far in this young season. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what his game is going to be. He's not playing this week in Bermuda. He's not going to play in Houston. So the next time we're going to see him is at Augusta.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of questions here. Trash it.
I'm going to trash this as well. He's a really streaky player. When he gets hot, he looks like the best player in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He can rip off some wins. I think he's cooled off, and I do not see odds value here at 12-1 on DJ at Augusta. All right, I was not knocking the bear. We all have our favorite players we like to play. I have Justin Thomas, Xander Schauffele, guys like that. The bear loves John Rahm. A lot of people are going to look to play Rahm in this Masters. He's seeking his first major, Wes.
Cash it.
What do you think? I'll let you go first. John Rahm at 12-1.
Absolutely cash it. And he was my pick actually before the season when we did our season preview to win it in April. Now he's going to have to do it in November. Third and off the tee, 12th in strokes gained tee to green. He's been close, and I think it's only a matter of time. I know we have a colleague here at VSiN that calls him a money pit in the majors. Well, he's going to be a money pit until he's not, and he's only 25 years old, and I really like this guy. He was one of my picks. I already have him at pocket at 14-1, so cash it for me.
I agree. Cash also. Finished ninth last year. All four rounds were subpar. The only drawback to this guy, he's got a little bit of a bad head, but once he learns how to control that, he's going to be a big winner on this tour.
I'm going to trash this one. I'm not going to bet John Rahm here. He is going to win a major at some point, but I don't think it's going to come at Augusta in 2020. He's playing really well right now, but at 12-1, I can't play it. Justin Thomas at 12-1. This is one of my favorite players, but Wes, I'm going to have to trash Justin Thomas here, too, because I don't think he plays well enough at Augusta for me to play him at this number.
Yeah, trash it for me. And plus, the one chink in his armor in his game, he doesn't put it in the fairway enough.
Right.
His approach game is as good as anybody's with his irons, but he's got to put it in the fairway here. He can get in some big trouble and post some big numbers. Trash it.
I'm cashing him, this guy, because I think he's you know, best all-around player on the tour. So, yeah, maybe this course gives him some difficulties, but I just think his game is just so solid.
I think he's best all-around player, too, but at 12-1, I can't play him here. And like Wes said, he's had some problems with driving accuracy, which bothers me going to Augusta. All right, we got a minute and a half to get through the last three. Brooks Koepka, 20-1, Johnny, cash or trash?
Trash. His game is just not there right now. And probably not going to be there this year. So let him pick it up. He's had, you know, back or knee problems, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, his hip, too.
Hip, too. So, yeah, he, you know, may pick it up again next year.
Trash it for me. Just not a high enough price for me to get involved.
Yeah, I was thinking Koepka was going to be a good play here over the summer, but off the injury and everything that's happened, I don't think he's in good enough form to play him at 12-1. Tiger Woods, defending champ. He's been the Masters champ for a year and a half. Johnny, cash or trash at 28-1 at DraftKings?
I trash Tiger at 100-1. I mean, I just
really?
Don't, yeah. All the guys on the tour are better than him. All the guys. You know, one thing about this Augusta, though, you remember Angel Cabrera? It's, you know, he would just come out of nowhere and play good here. For some reason, guys just play good here. Tiger has always played good here. But I just think everybody is a good player now on tour.
Trashed it for me. He was 72nd in a 77 player field at the Zozo.
I noticed
this weekend
that.
On a course that he owned, Sherwood Country Club.
Yeah, trash for me too. Wes, get your answer here. Cash or trash? Bryson DeChambeau, the favorite at 8-1.
Not at 8-1 for me. Trash it, but he could go on and probably win by 5 with the way he's playing right now.
I don't think so.
No, you know, I would call this like trashy cash. this guy's a long hitter, but he's always in trouble. You know, he doesn't hit the fairways enough. So this is of course, it gives him trouble.
At 8-1, I'd have to trash that, too. All right, that's Masters, trash or cash. Up next, we talk college football.
Are you VIP material? I know Matt Eumanns is. DraftKings VIPs enjoy exclusive benefits, enhanced promotional offers, top-tier customer support, access to personalized contests, and more. Visit DraftKings.com/VSiN to learn more. Plus, everyone can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, and new customers can get up to $1,000 as a sign-up bonus. Sign up with promo code VSIN, that's V-S-I-N, to claim your exclusive offer. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER, over 21, New Jersey and Pennsylvania only. Back to you, Matt.
All right, thanks. Tom Hart joins us now. Appreciate the time. ESPN and SEC Network play-by-play on college football. And, Tom, I think you're going to be on the, I'm going to say, Georgia-Kentucky game this week, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
All right, Georgia-Kentucky. And at DraftKings, Bulldogs are 14-point road favorites over Kentucky, which is also off a loss to Missouri, and Georgia obviously trying to bounce back from that loss at Alabama. How do you see that matchup this week in the SEC?
Well, I think Georgia is a team that compares itself to national championship contenders, even though they didn't have a good second half against Alabama a couple weeks ago. They expect to be in the college football playoff or at least close to it. So this is a huge game for Georgia. It's not just a must win, but it's also a get right game.
Right.
They've got to figure out some issues offensively. They haven't had explosive playmakers. The quarterback position has been a toss up. And so we're curious, and nobody knows just yet if they stick with who they've had at quarterback or if they go to the USC transfer JT Daniels back there to try and get the offense a little bit more explosive. And Kentucky has had all sorts of issues offensively, especially last week against Missouri. They couldn't get their offense on the field or keep it on the field. They only ran 36 plays. Missouri's running back, Roundtree, ran the ball 37 times, and Kentucky ran a total of 36 offensive plays. So they played two different quarterbacks in that one. Their previous starting quarterback, Terry Wilson, has missed the last 2 days of practice. I would think that they're probably trying to figure out how they can look different at that position. And they've got a couple options. Joey Gatewood is the Auburn transfer who some snaps against Missouri. He is he's more than capable to run the offense. He hadn't had a whole lot of reps. And then they have a true freshman, Bo Allen, who's more of a pass-first guy, who I know they're anxious to get on the field. some way and somehow. So if Terry Wilson doesn't take more snaps throughout this week, I would probably expect to change a quarterback for Kentucky to try and find something to score some points.
All right, Joey Gatewood lost a competition, quarterback competition, Auburn to Bo Nix, and he is now in Kentucky. Well, I'm curious, Tom, what you think of Stetson Bennett after you break down tape. He was good in his two starts between the hedges and goes on the road to Alabama and implodes a little bit in the second half in that loss to the Tide. Do you think Kirby Smart is going to stick with him, or you think there is a chance JT Daniels, a USC transfer, is going to get a shot?
I think there's a real chance that Daniels gets a shot. Kirby does a lot of things well, and I don't know if there's anybody better at keeping things close to the vest. You just don't hear leaks out of that program when they have personnel changes or structural changes. That won't entirely solve their problem. I mean, JT Daniels did not put up incredible numbers as a starter at USC 2 years ago, and, of course, only played one game in the opener last year before tearing his ACL. Georgia's really struggled finding playmakers on the perimeter, especially guys relative to other national championship contenders. I mean, Alabama makes everybody look bad at that position, but the Georgia guys just weren't in their same league. Kirby has long been a defense-first, run-first kind of old-school coach, and mm-hmm. that stereotype doesn't always fit him, but I think it fits him with his team. Bennett's a guy who actually, you know, on throws between the numbers – shows a propensity to go deep more often than Jake Fromm does. I think, you know, on the radar gun, his arm holds up. He's got as strong, if not a stronger arm than Fromm between the numbers. Doesn't do as much outside the numbers on those long, you know, line drive type throws. But they're willing to take shots. I think JT Daniels changes that immediately when he gets in, not just willing to take shots, but should have the arm strength to do even more at that position. What they like about Bennett is the same thing that they liked about Fromm. He's a great – it sounds like a dirty word when you say about a quarterback, right? He's a great game manager. He gets him in and out of plays. Yeah, right? Gets him in and out of plays that they want to be in. He makes the right decisions. It's a very complicated offense and has been at Georgia over the years, which sometimes makes it harder to get that second or third string guy who maybe – more athletic, but doesn't have the reps. It makes it harder to get him on the field or to plug him in for certain packages. So, you know, you need a quarterback that can think through all of these processes to run this offense.
Tom, flipping over to the other team that'll be in the cocktail party game, not this weekend, but next weekend, of course, Georgia at Kentucky, and then Florida hosting Mizzou this weekend. And Florida, look, they were supposed to play last weekend. This game was actually supposed to happen last Saturday and got moved here because of the COVID-19 issues within the Florida program. Gators just under two touchdowns, -13.5-point favorite. Mizzou's beat them in the swamp two of the last three. What are you hearing in terms of the availability of some of the Gator players for Saturday?
Yeah, I said Kirby Smart was good at keeping things close to the vest. Dan Mullen's even better at it. I do not know, nor do I have any extra insight on who's available or who's not available. Missouri's down some guys too. Eli Drinkwitz has had to deal with that for a good chunk of the season. So I don't know what to expect in that regard. And isn't that the biggest wild card? Like, you know, even if we had expectations at Tuesday afternoon, those change with another round of tests that occur on Thursday. To me, the biggest issue is not just that there will be key players missing for Florida, but the fact that they essentially missed a week of practice. Mm-hmm. So how does that impact you if you have to go to a key position in a backup role? You just haven't had the reps that you need to be successful, I think. And on the other side of the game, you know, Missouri has shown a propensity to play better than the reputation this season. That Kentucky game that they had last week is a game that should have been looked at as between peers. Just speaking your all's language, the smart money was on Missouri all week. They backed it up. They have an offense that can control the clock, that can keep other teams off the field. I think they had a 21-play drive at some point in that Kentucky game. And I usually don't care about time of possession. In this era of college football, plays can be made at the drop of a hat. But when you run when the other team's offense simply can't get on the field, that's a really, really good defense, and that's what Missouri showed last week against Kentucky.
Tom Hart with us, SEC Network and ESPN play-by-play announcer. Tom, how about LSU as a three-point favorite at Auburn? It was T.J. Finley, very impressive last week against South Carolina in place of Miles Brennan. Bo Nix has struggled, but Auburn, again, pulls a game out of the hat, controversial call last week. Do you think LSU deserves to be a three-point favorite at Auburn?
No, I think that should be about even. I look at those programs as even right now. LSU's got a lot of questions. Finley was efficient, but the real success for LSU last week was their ground game. I think it's easy to jump on, put the quarterback in the headlines and talk about him. If I'm not mistaken, they actually dropped from fourth in the nation in passing to sixth or eighth after that game. So relative to Brennan, he is a step back, even though he had a good game. So they're missing, you know, the way I view that game is LSU still missing their starting quarterback until Brennan gets back on the field. The running game was really good for LSU last time out. Auburn's got so many questions. They've been bailed out of two games at the under 6 minute mark by a controversial call and failure of the replay booth. And I'm not going to pile on the refs. We know mistakes happen on the field of play. To me, the officiating malpractice occurred in the replay booth,
yep,
where they weren't judged properly. Yeah, so it goes without saying that those are two games that obviously could have been swung the other way. And the third game is the Kentucky game. Kentucky, I thought, was the victim of that same thing at the end of the second quarter, right before the half, when they had a touchdown that wasn't ruled at the goal line, would have given Kentucky the lead. Now, does Auburn still win that game? Yeah, I mean, they had another half to play. They could have certainly still won the game. But Auburn living the charm life, yeah, when it comes to the guys in stripes and those three specific games. Mm-hmm. And you say it's a small sample size, but it's an abbreviated schedule. So those numbers loom pretty large to me. Bo Nix was a lot better last week. He was a lot more consistent. He was a lot more efficient. He got back on track with Seth Williams, his number one receiver. And he has been, over the course of his career, he has been a much different player when it comes to this all-important position at home. I mean, the numbers are astounding. And whether it's random or not, you can't ignore him. His numbers at home, drastically different than on the road. On the road, more interceptions and touchdowns. At home, 11 touchdowns, no picks in SEC games.
That's a great point. I like to look at those home-road numbers, too. Last 30 seconds or so, Tom, I want to ask you about Mississippi State and Alabama tied without Jalen Waddle. And is this number too big? We're seeing Alabama minus 31 over Mike Leach.
Yeah, Mississippi State, last I heard, will be without their star running back, Kylan Hill. I don't know if he's going to play another down for him. He was sensational in the LSU game. They had success against LSU's Bo Pelini's defense because he tried to run man the whole time. Bama's going to run what they've always run. They're going to pattern match. You're not going to have a lot of huge advantages and mismatches for Mississippi State's wide receivers. Their offense has a long way to go. If Alabama, we know their offense can put up points. So if Alabama can get to that 31-point threshold, I don't think that number's too big.
Okay. All right. Tom, thanks a lot for jumping on today. Much appreciate your time. Tom Hart, ESPN and SEC Network play-by-play announcer. West, did you have a play on that game? I think you had Mississippi State.
Yeah, I think this is kind of a get-through-it game for Alabama. Don't get anybody else hurt, and backdoor could be live for the Bulldogs, but hold your nose, taking Mississippi State.
All right, Tom Hart's calling the Georgia-Kentucky game on Saturday. Do you have a play on that or no?
No.
I know a very sharp bettor who likes Kentucky in that game, but quarterback questions with the Wildcats. All right, we break hour number two next up on My Guys in the Desert.